This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is huge for Melbourne. We've got a homegrown vaccine powerhouse that promises to speed as well as provide certainty and local control. It's the difference between cancellations and carry on. And joining us is Professor Catherine Bennett from Deakin University to talk about what this means for all of us. Catherine, welcome to Drive.
Good afternoon.
Catherine, what's, the best way to explain how making vaccines in Melbourne will change the next pandemic and our experience here?
Well, there's a few things to consider here. One is that the vaccines for a new pandemic strain of anything, if we can get a vaccine, make the biggest difference right from the start. It's where you go from having no immunity in the population or very low natural immunity to trying to, as we did, keep the virus out until we had a vaccine. So we did really well in Australia by not having the virus circulating in the population mostly until after we had the vaccine. And that meant more people had their first experience of an infection after having been vaccinated. And that made an enormous difference to the number of people that ended up in hospital and also saved a lot of lives in the process. So it's about that timely access to vaccines. What we saw in the pandemic was that we were so good at keeping the virus out of our community, we weren't seen to be a big, you know, under threat population. And we're also a relatively small population countrywide on the world stage. And so we didn't have quite the same bargaining power. And when it really got tough and people were really panicked and wanting to hold on to vaccine produced in their own country and not share it with the rest of the world, we did bear some of the brunt of that. So having our local supply of a new vaccine using the technology that's likely to be the technology going ahead because it allows us to build safe vaccines quite quickly. They, you know, 100 days to actually build these new vaccines is what they've been talking about for a while now. And we can do all the safety, you know, the studies in our own population makes a big difference. So it would mean we would have vaccine, we would have it earlier, and we would have the best benefit from that. And that would mean we wouldn't have to work as hard as we did last time to keep the virus out of the country altogether until we could get to the point where we had enough people covered.
Catherine, I just had some flashbacks, and I remember seeing you on the TV all the time giving us all those fabulous updates, which was just amazing, and thank you for giving those during the pandemic. But I'm just thinking about the, you know, that anxiety around not being able to access the vaccines and having to wait for overseas countries, and then there was the discussion about, you know, who rightfully should get it, etc. So potentially we're removing that fear, aren't we, by saying, okay, well, hopefully we can produce and provide our population here and help our neighbours.
Absolutely. And that's right. And so it is about the region as well. When we were looking into this as part of the inquiry into the Australian government response that I was involved in as well, the concern was that you might have a local production, but you'd still be linked into international expectations about, you know, who gets what. And so you might be producing it here, but you might have to ship it offshore and not have as much as you would like locally. But what is really important about this agreement with the Australian government and with Moderna now being based here is that we have guaranteed under that contract access to sufficient vaccines for the Australian population first. So that, and or, you know, sufficient oversupply potentially to also be serving regional neighbours as well, right from get-go as soon as production can kick in. So that's a big difference. The other was a concern that, well, maybe you can make it here, but maybe we still don't have the supply lines for all the ingredients. But they're also looking into that as well to make sure that that doesn't become, you know, we don't have blockages up the supply line that mean we've got a factory sitting idle, that we're actually able to, you know, manage that as well. So a lot of thought's gone into this and a lot of negotiation behind the scenes into the agreement to mean this would be an absolute game changer compared to where we were last time.
In terms of, the types of conditions or viruses that a vaccine could be potentially developed for, does it cover a broad spectrum?
Well, it does. It potentially now can be used for not just a range of illnesses, including things like influenza, but potentially also for multivalent vaccines where you might have influenza, RSV and COVID, you know, covered with one dose that's still effective against those three more common viruses. So that's important, so that you might have those combination vaccines, as well as having the ability to build vaccines quite quickly as any strains, including influenza, change with time or change with avian influenza contact. But it's also, it was being developed with a broader view. It's actually being looked at for other conditions as well, not just infections, could potentially be used for bacterial as well as viral, but also for cancer and other things. So again, to have in-country or sovereign capability is really important, because we're still in the early days of this as a platform. So it's not built for other things yet, but it is the platform. And part of this is actually building the local expertise to work with this vaccine platform that then puts us in a better position to potentially expand going into the future.
We're chatting with Professor Catherine Bennett on how Melbourne's new vaccine hub can keep daily life steady, hopefully, as if we do hit another pandemic, and I'm sure at some stage we will. Catherine, in terms of where we're at with vaccine development, after COVID, have we sort of hit a bit of a tipping point where the game has completely changed? Because from my memory, it took ages to develop a vaccine.
Well, it was interesting. COVID, of course, was quite controversial because it was a type of virus, the coronavirus, that they hadn't had success in developing vaccines for previously. So there was a bit of scepticism. Mm. And we honestly didn't know whether it was going to be possible. And it wasn't just mRNA vaccines. They did develop a number of different COVID viruses, vaccines using different platforms. So they did get there. But for us, it seemed like an eternity to know that we had an effective and safe vaccine. And then we waited for the full data. By then, we were now getting into the second half of a full year of managing closed borders and lockdown. And so it meant, well, you know, let's wait for all the safety data. Some of the other countries made emergency determinations. We waited for the expected data. And it also gave us the advantage of what was happening elsewhere in the world. So it was a bit of a trade-off. We could have gone sooner had we done what other countries had done. But actually keeping those brakes on, keeping the virus out as much as we could to get the extra information in, I think, was important for people, as well as having, you know, sufficient supply, which did take us a bit of time to build up. We did produce AstraZeneca in Australia. That was a help early on, and a lot of people still underestimate how important AstraZeneca was in our health response, as well as other parts of the world as well. But ultimately transitioning to the mRNAs, and that's the main vaccine we now still rely on to chase the different variants and keep it up to date.
Catherine, a lot of people think, when you think of COVID, they think of the lockdowns and, you know, it wasn't enjoyable for most of us. Is it fair to say that this vaccine factory will reduce the risk of having to have lockdowns if there is another pandemic?
It will certainly help. It might be that you have something that's terrible that does have a high death rate again, that might impact more age groups next time, we don't know. So it might be that you still have to have quite extreme measures to try and suppress that spread of whatever the pathogen is, but you wouldn't have to do it for as long. If you knew that you were looking at about a 3-month span when you could start to get a vaccine into trial, that you've already tested the platform and the technology, you're adapting existing known to be effective and safe vaccines, that changes it completely. So if we had something land in March like we did last time, where we shut the border, we already had the complete genome of the SARS-CoV-2 virus in Australia and around the world by January, February. So in fact, by the time it was clear that it was spreading and we had to close borders, you're already a month into a period that would be part of that 3 to 4 months of vaccine development. So by the time you close your borders, you wouldn't be looking at that 12 months or, in fact, you know, longer of closed borders that we had to endure this time.
Which is good news. How many vaccines will it be able to produce a year?
I don't have that information off the top of my head.
That's all right.
As I said, this is something that will expand potentially as well. It would certainly cover our mRNA production for the Moderna vaccines. And they have had a warm-up period. This is now, launching it as it's fully operational. So that will now be, part of not just Australia, but global production if we're producing excess vaccines. But importantly, Australia First is really helpful just to know that we have our supply now guaranteed in a way that we haven't had to this point.
I think so as well. Catherine, finally, just one last question while we've got you is, we saw the spread of misinformation during the pandemic, and still we see a lot of misinformation occurring on vaccines, and we know the benefits of them. What would you say, I suppose, to someone who perhaps has read that and gone down a bit of a rabbit hole about the safety of these vaccines and the production of them here?
Well, a lot of the misinformation was about sharing terrible stories about what was going to happen to people who were vaccinated. And it was, it didn't happen in the way that they predicted, but they said, oh, it will happen. It's still going to happen. And we did see health impacts of the pandemic, as you would. And a lot of it stems back to both COVID infections, but also the general disruptions, the impact of lockdown and so on. But as we look ahead, our data, including our looking at those sort of global measures like our death rates, looking at that by age group, all those things are settling back to not just pre-pandemic averages, but actually trending as they were pre-pandemic, which in Australia is a good news story because our life expectancy is getting a bit longer each year and so on. So we've actually settled back into it. That's the best evidence that we're actually travelling okay with this. In Australia, we're also not vaccinating children. We didn't have that mandated in the same way it was overseas. And now healthy adults can be vaccinated if they choose. They can have a booster each year. But really the focus is on people who are more at risk of that severe disease still. And they're the ones who still want to be vaccinated on a regular basis because it's better to have your immunity boosted by a vaccine than by an infection, because we still sadly see some people ending up in hospital and passing away as a result of an infection. So it's not off the table, but I guess it's more focused now. And I think that helps the rest of the population settle too. They're not having to make decisions about their child being vaccinated for COVID. And with time and seeing the outcomes, people will trust this new technology as well. It doesn't become quite so new a few years down the track when people have seen it and are actually not tuned into the same misinformation. Unfortunately, what's happening in the US at the moment, though, is spreading it globally again in large waves. And so that has an impact. And so we just, you balance that by sharing the data about how we're actually doing and the fact that we're not seeing those terrible things that people have been predicting.
And I imagine too, Catherine, that in terms of, I suppose, stability in the region, being able to manufacture and provide vaccines for our local neighbours will also help as well.
Look, it will. It will. It's really important that some of those more isolated communities, it was sort of easy to get the virus out if they stopped, again, having, closed their international border. But at the same time, it was a big burden on some of those communities that might not have been set up for the same kind of wave of severe illness with a new disease. So that's a problem. But I also think not only being able to get it out there quickly and not having that delay where people are hearing misinformation before they've even got a chance to, get access to a vaccine, but producing our own, and we know what our standards are in Australia. We checked all vaccines coming into the country, but making our own according to our own safety standards, I think, is also reassuring to the public as well.
Absolutely. And made in Australia. I think it's fantastic. Catherine, thank you so much for chatting with us. We love having you on the radio. We hope we don't see you on the TV again as much as we...
Or talking about good things. Good things happen thanks health for as well.
Thanks, Catherine. Appreciate your time. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That is Professor Catherine Bennett, Chair in Epidemiology at Deakin University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.